Well, good morning, you worthless slaves. Welcome to Christ Church, especially to those of you who might be new or visiting from Salida. Equally worthless. So great to see you with us. What a gospel this morning, huh? So sincere thanks to Father Terry for the opportunity to preach this. You announce you're leaving and you see what he does with the Rota. Jesus said, "Do you thank slaves for doing what was commanded? So also, when you do what you are ordered to do, say, 'We are worthless slaves. We've done only what we ought to have done.'" As we continue our preaching series on holy habits for whole life discipleship, I want to focus in with you this morning about cultivating gratitude, or humble and hearty thanks, as that great prayer from our prayer book so beautifully puts it, the great thanksgiving at the end of the daily office morning prayer. But let me come back to that in a second, because first, we have to wrestle a little bit with this rather difficult word from Jesus. We are worthless slaves, doing only what we ought to have done. Now, isn't that the pick-me-up you needed this morning when the Broncos are horrible? What in the world does Jesus mean here? Because this doesn't comport with our image of him, of kind, loving, generous, gracious. And indeed, Jesus is all of those things. I think the key to understanding this passage this morning is this concept of merit. Merit. Let me explain. Jesus uses this analogy of the master and servant a lot. It's all throughout the Gospels. And that, in and of itself, already grates on our ears, because immediately our minds go to that horrific original sin of slavery in America and around the world. That sin of structural racism architected into the laws and policies of this nation in ways that the 1863 Emancipation Proclamation only began to amend. I'm mindful that Jim Crow was still in place for at least a decade after this church was founded. But that's not exactly what Jesus is talking about this morning. We won't sweat all of the details about slavery in the Roman Empire. We can explore that at Coffee Talk for you nerds who would like to join me. But suffice to say that slavery in Jesus' time wasn't so much racialized as it was economic. Doesn't make it a whole lot better. Don't mishear me. But this is the point I want to explore. Sure, some slaves were slaves because they had been conquered by the Roman Empire. They were prisoners of war, and so they were dragged into slavery. Others were born into it or even sold into slavery. But the underlying issue at the time was poverty. And upwards of a third of the society in the Roman Empire was in slavery. One out of every three people. So is Jesus, what is he doing? He is making a point about the social conditions of the day. And particularly in first century Palestine, he is mindful of indebtedness. Indebtedness. Often if you're a servant, your master is someone to whom you owe a debt. Nexum is the technical term. Again, we can nerd out on that at Coffee Talk if you'd like. Where instead of using your property as collateral to pay off a debt, you used yourself. And if you don't think that we have that kind of master-servant relationship today, you must not own a Visa. Still, if by servant Jesus doesn't mean someone who is ripped from their homeland and forced to work without wages because of the color of their skin, but someone who had to work for a debtor to pay off an incurred debt, it doesn't really relieve our modern mind, right? Oh, so Jesus is my Visa debt collector? Again, that doesn't really jive with the picture of Jesus we know. Do I still get my airline miles? Make no mistake, the image that we have of Jesus, of kind, loving, generous, is grounded in Scripture. When Jesus talks about the master-servant coupling elsewhere throughout the Gospels, he does so in ways that subvert the whole paradigm. Just a few chapters before our gospel this morning, which comes to us from Luke 17, in Luke 12, Jesus says, "Blessed are the slaves whom the master finds alert when he comes. Truly, I tell you, he'll have them sit down to eat, and he will come and serve them." Not only does the master here invite the servants to the table, he serves them. And of course, in one of Jesus' great demonstrations of this is the washing of his disciples' feet, where he again alludes to this master-servant relationship, but he flips the whole thing on its head. "Do you know what I've done for you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for that is what I am. So if I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have set you an example that you should also do as I have done to you. Very truly, I tell you, servants are not greater than their master. If you know these things, blessed are you that do them." John 13. Jesus very definitely refers to himself as a master, teacher, rabbi, Lord. But he inhabits that sovereignty in service. That's the Jesus that we know and love, right? So that brings us back to our gospel today. What are we to make of this? Again, I think the key concept here is merit. Jesus uses this master-servant paradigm that would have been very well known to his audience to remind us that there is an unequal relationship between him and his disciples, between us and God. He's the rabbi, we're the apprentices. And he uses that debt aspect of the master-servant relationship to remind his disciples and us that he doesn't owe us anything. The debt is the other way around. To put it back in our modern parlance, he didn't rack up the visa bill. We did. And some of us went a little wilder in our sin-spending spree than others, Father Terry. But we won't get into the details because we're in church. So on this occasion, Jesus is reminding us of the demands of discipleship in turn. It's not all about what God has done for us. It's also about what he asks from us in return. Enter holy habits for whole life discipleship. Jesus is stressing here what we offer back to God. In our habits, in our practices, in our daily discipleship, it isn't, if I can use the word, meritorious. It doesn't earn us merits. That is to say, we're not trying to earn anything, including our salvation or God's love and affection. That's all already been given to us as a gift. When you stand before the judgment seat of Christ, as every single person here and everyone who's ever existed will, you're not going to say, "Jesus, my bud, my bro, thanks so much for everything you did for that like incarnation, crucifixion, resurrection thing. Really good work." And I know, Father Terry really needed it. I mean, what a screw up, am I right? That guy. Did you see? But me. Well, you know, I mean, you saw my works. I kind of earned it. So is there any way that I could get that Barbie mansion version over there? To go back to the debt analogy, it's as if Jesus says, "Hey, I know that you racked up tons and tons of Visa debt, but I'm canceling it. It's a gift. All I ask, though, is that you pay it forward and forgive those who are indebted to you." So worthiness here isn't to be understood in those terms of like having worth and that dignity. It's as if meritorious or unmeritorious. Jesus isn't saying we're worthless or unworthy in terms of our essential dignity. Remember, this is the master who would wash his servants' feet. and demonstrates our tremendous worthiness, our infinite worthiness, that he would give up everything to be with us and even to die for us. Recognizing that we are unworthy servants is simply acknowledging that we are unmeritorious servants. That we're not even trying to pay back a debt that Jesus already paid for us. We're just receiving it as a gift. And then we're doing what we've been called to do. And that's actually good news. We don't do what we do to try to earn God's love or attention or affection. That's already given. But what we do is respond. The gift, not only of salvation, but as Father Terry mentioned last week, the manifold gifts of God as the source of all that is good in our everyday lives. Calvin, reflecting on our gospel this morning, puts it this way. Whenever we meet with the word reward, or whenever it occurs to our recollection, let us look upon this as the crowning act of the goodness of God to us. That though we are completely in his debt, he condescends to enter into a bargain with us. We are deserving in terms of our essential dignity and God's inexhaustible love for us. But we are not deserving in the sense that we deserve or can earn or demand the gift of grace. As one of our parishioners, Dave Noble, put it after our first service, Jesus is pushing back against any sense of our entitlement. I love and miss that great Catholic prayer before receiving communion. And I still say it under my breath every time I come up for communion. Riffing on the centurion's prayer in Matthew 8. Lord, I am not worthy to receive you, but only say the word and my soul shall be healed. It's precisely that we don't deserve it, that we can't demand it, that makes it such a gift. If we approach God as if we're demanding grace because of something that we've done, we've got it all wrong. So as we think about holy habits for whole life discipleship, what is our rightful response to this great gift of unearned, unmerited grace? As I mentioned at the outset, gratitude. Again, the general thanksgiving in our prayer book, the end of morning prayer in the daily office, puts it so well. We thine unworthy, or we might say unmeriting servants, do give thee most humble and hearty thanks. But how do we practice gratitude? Not just as a one-off thing, well done, Jesus, thank you for the salvation, but as a way of life, as a daily habit and rhythm. For our practice this week, I want to encourage you to try something that's made a big difference in my life. And let me just say, especially of late, as I spent this last week grumbling and grumpy and complaining as I packed up my house when I really wanted to stay in Denver and I didn't want to go anywhere else. And I told the earlier service at one point, my wife asked, are you speaking in tongues over there? And nope, such a fresher. So actually, precisely in those moments where we are anything but grateful, where we don't know where life is headed, or perhaps where we're weighed down by the suffering of this world, how do we practice and cultivate gratitude? St. Ignatius of Loyola gave us a great gift called a daily examen, and I know that a number of you already practice this, but let me flag this up for those of you who may never have heard of this thing. What he suggested is that at some point throughout the day, for me, it's best at in the evening time, when you've completed the course of your day and you have an opportunity to look back over it, that you just sit there and imagine God's love and goodness and favor towards us. Just bask in God's love. And then second, to review your day and recognize all of the ways that you encountered God throughout the course of that day. They don't have to be big moments that stop you in your track revelations or those goose pimple experiences. Those are great. But for me, they're honestly few and far between. Often my experiences of God are anything but those sort of rapturous moments. They're just little God glimpses. Something that my kids said or did. Thankfulness that I had 3 full meals over the course of that day. A kind word from my wife or even a stranger. A beautiful sunset illuminating the entire front range. God is, Ignatius taught, in all things. So we don't have to look for some special spiritual category other than our everyday lives. The point that he's drawing us into is to cultivate an awareness of all of the little ways that God is already present and at work in our lives, so that we don't just rush past it without acknowledging it, go to bed and start another new day. The third step, then, is to thank God for those boundless gifts of grace that he bestows upon us. And then finally, for myself, I conclude with one of Ignatius's prayers, the Suscepe prayer, Latin for take. The first word of this prayer, which perfectly encapsulates our gospel today and everything that I'm trying to say in our sermon. It goes like this. Take, Lord, and receive all my liberty, my memory, my understanding, my entire will, all I have and call my own. You have given all to me. To you, Lord, I return it. Everything is yours. Do with it what you will. Give me only your love and grace. That is enough for me. Amen.